It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters and Super Bowl Sunday and all of that. A lot to talk about here in the world that we live in. January jobs report, we've got to talk about what that means for the economy and oil and the stock market. Kind of a rough week this week for stocks. Dow down 261 points, which is about 1.5%. But the S&P 500 down over 3% just for the week. So this whole swirl continues into 2016. Very, very difficult year just as we start here, a very, very difficult way to start the year. So we have had this theme all year about quality. And quality, we go back to during these really difficult periods of time in the market, in the economy, when we talk about quality, we're talking about companies that we invest in that we have the conviction that they're not going to go away. That's what gets us through these really difficult times. And really, the economy isn't even bad, really that bad yet. It's going to get bad. For sure. Just like stocks will go down for sure. There's these economic cycles, they just happen. They're completely inevitable. It doesn't mean it's going to happen tomorrow. It doesn't mean it's going to happen this year even. The chances of recession, and we'll talk about that today, they're very low. Probably at most 1 in 5. So 20% chance this year, 2016, we're in recession. That means something when it comes to stocks, because if the economy itself doesn't roll over, that it's really difficult for stocks to get a whole lot worse than where they are today. That's the good news. The bad news is at some point, we can't stay out of recession forever. So at some point, be it late this year, mid next year, 2017, at some point, the economy goes back into these cycles. It slows down. We go through a difficult period of time. Unemployment goes back up. And then that's even more difficult for stocks. So it's an interesting period of time as an investor, and I'm telling you now that it's going to really test your patience. It will test your patience this year, maybe next year, and that's part of this very, very long-term game. That's what makes investing so difficult, is that we go through these long periods of time that are pretty tough, and they're not overly satisfying. There's no instant gratification whatsoever. How would you have liked to own LinkedIn this past week? LinkedIn, the business social networking site. There was an article I read about LinkedIn not too long ago that went viral on LinkedIn, that LinkedIn was actually just a professional dating site. And there was a woman in London who wrote about her experience on LinkedIn, and she had friends and followers or connections or whatever you have on LinkedIn, but she was inundated day after day by requests that were more like dating requests as opposed to business connection requests. She wrote about it and it went viral on LinkedIn. Hopefully it taught everyone a little bit of a lesson. But anyway, LinkedIn shares on Friday down almost 45%. 45% in one day. That's one day. And if you look at the chart over the last week and month and year, just since over the last year, which is a very young year, we're only 5-6 weeks into the year, LinkedIn is down 52%. Again, go back to these themes of quality. What are my three pillars of quality? Number one, a diversified income stream. Two, they haven't borrowed too much. Three, consistently increasing their profitability or their margins. Not something a company like LinkedIn is doing. A diversified income stream, not at all. So that's what happens to stocks and companies that are riding a wave that to some extent is very myopic. Gets cut off, it gets threatened, boom. The stocks don't go down 5%. They don't go down 10%. They go down 50% and they go down quickly. That doesn't happen to a more established company with all of those pillars intact. So what do we need to really get to today? First of all, live here in the studio this Sunday morning, the number 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750. I'm still on baby watch. In fact, I thought last night my wife was going into labor. Almost called Scott Maxim to go and do a replay or almost called Ryan Ely and had him just host this morning. because we thought Lynn was going into labor. And then it just calmed down. Just kind of all that labor stuff went away. So it'll still probably be midweek this week. So I'm here for now. And if she does go into labor during the show, it's fine because I live like a couple blocks in the studio. She'll probably shoot me a text message. Hey, could you come home? I'm in labor. As soon as the show's done. It should be done soon. But I'm very close to home. I'm only a couple blocks away. Anyway, the number here in the studio for your questions about the world that we live in, how it impacts your portfolio, and what you should be doing right now in this really volatile stock market, and a bond market that's very nervous as well. So we have these two major areas we're investing in, the high-quality stock world, the high-quality bond world, but the bond market is twice the size as the stock market. And we've talked for years about the importance of bonds, the advantages of having bonds, the steady, consistent interest that comes from bonds. Well, that still remains the same. That's still the same as it was a year ago and 5 years ago. The numbers have changed slightly because interest rates are now even lower than when we started the year. We're back to 1.8%. So well under 2% on the 10-year treasury. And that has a big impact on all of the, or has a big impact on the entire bond market. The economy has a gigantic impact on the credit worthiness of companies. And that is really the single biggest factor besides where prevailing interest rates are when it comes to bonds. Companies got to be able to pay their interest and then pay your money back. They have to stay in business. To some extent, investing in bonds is binary. They either survive, pay interest, and then give you back your initial capital that you effectively lent them when you bought a bond from them. You gave them your cash. They stayed in business over the course of the 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 year period, which is called your maturity. They've survived that period and then you get your money back. That's how a bond works. So these companies have to be able to survive. And in a bad economy, default rates, well, they go up. And we're going to start seeing that, and that's already very much priced into the bond market. You're going to start seeing a lot of energy companies go out of business. There's no question about that. Oil keeps floating around this $30 of a barrel. Energy companies, there's plenty of energy companies in the United States and in Canada that were effectively built a business plan around $50 oil. Hey, we can make money if oil is $50 and above, and hey, at $100, it looks pretty darn good. But at $30, hey, we're losing $20 for every barrel of oil we pull out of the ground because of all our costs. How long does that go on? That dance can go on for a while, but it can't go on indefinitely. And that's the scenario that we're kind of in the midst of right now. No one knows at what point the system will crack. It's completely unsustainable today. You can't have the 535 plus energy companies in America can't survive with $30 oil. So they're not going to all go out of business, but estimates are somewhere around 25 to 35% of these oil and gas companies in America, they can go out of business if this $30 oil continues. So that's something that we need to watch for, and that impacts the credit markets. So we've got to be very, very careful where we invest in the world that we live in here in 2016, heading in to 2017. So let's talk a little bit about this economy. And again, the theme behind today is we need to understand where we stand, the threats that face us from an economic standpoint, which of course affects our portfolios, our 401k accounts, all the money that we've invested is completely and deeply impacted by what happens in the underlying economy, the unmistakable tide of the American economy. So we got a gigantic jobs report on Friday. Let's give the jobs report. Initially, when I heard it, I thought this is a B minus. Maybe a C-plus jobs report. The more I read into it, it's probably a B. Could even give it a B-plus. So payrolls rose 151,000. So 151,000 new jobs that were just announced, those were jobs for the month of January. Again, doesn't look like a recession when you're still adding 151,000 jobs. Now that's lower than the more than 200,000 that we were adding month after month last year. It's still a pretty healthy number. So you can look at it a couple ways. Hey, job creation is slowing down. That's not a good sign. Or you could say, hey, we're still adding 151,000 new jobs, which is a relatively strong pace if we were to continue to be able to do that. As far as the rate, the unemployment rate declined 0.1%. So we went from 5% down to 4.9%. And interestingly, the labor force participation rate, these are the people, how many people jump back into the workforce, that actually rose. So that's getting close to 63% is the labor force participation number, down pretty significantly over the last 15 years of around 67, 68%. And that's the number, though, that you hear about, that percentage of people that are participating in the job market. So you've got to want a job to be in the labor force. If you totally quit looking, you retire or you give up, you're not counted in the labor force. And we had many, many economic reports and job numbers that came out in the beginning of this recovery where the unemployment rate dipped down significantly just because a lot of people were dropping out. That didn't happen in this number. So we actually have more people entering back into the job economy. So very different from these the employment reports we were getting several years ago. Now, here are some of these underlying numbers that mean something when it comes to the labor economy, hence the real economy. The work week. Well, we can measure how many hours on average people are working. That has continued to rise. So the work week went up. We average hourly earnings. So we can measure about how much people earn per hour. That went back up another 0.5%, is now up 2.5% year over year. So adding jobs, work week is still getting slightly longer or bigger, meaning that employers are saying, hey, I need you a little bit more. I need you to stay a little bit late. Average hours, average earnings are going up just this month and over the past year. The U6, this is that unemployment, that underemployment rate that you hear about, is still just below the 10% number. So 9.9%. The headline unemployment rate of 4.9%, that's the lowest we've seen in 8 years. But here's the other key to all this. It's not too strong of a report for the Fed to go crazy at their next meeting and jack up interest rates, which will throw everything into disarray. And I want to talk about the potential. If they do that, if they start cranking rates up significantly and quickly, it will start a chain reaction. And I've got that played out for you. And we'll talk about that here on Money Matters. The number here in the studio, phone lines open, 404-872-0750. Again, this Sunday morning, it's 68 degrees on Peachtree. You're tuned into Money Matters. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. More Money Matters straight ahead. Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Hey, we've got to do a quick weather update. Sunshine today, high of 55, chilly, but nice. Low of 35 tonight, brought to you by Shoemate Heating and Cooling. Though, stay tuned for Kirk Mellish's forecast coming up this week as things on the weather should change. Let's go to the phones here. You are listening to Money Matters, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Jim joins us on the line. Jim, good morning.
Yes, sir. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
My brother had an IRA with the required minimum distribution, and he passed away on his IRA, and everything is going into the estate, and wanted to know if we should stop that minimum distribution because it is taxable.
Well, so first of all, I'm sorry to hear about your brother. You said he was 70?
He was 80.
It was 80, okay. And who's the beneficiary? Is the IRA, who's the beneficiary?
He did not have a will.
Oh, he did not have a will?
Yes, okay. Sir.
So then it's going to go back to the estate, and then it's going to have to go through some sort of probating process, and then...
I'm the only survivor of the family.
Okay, so I'm not an estate planning attorney on this, and this could get a little complicated. Here's what I think will happen. If you're the only remaining beneficiary or the beneficiary,
right,
then that money, if it stays in IRA form, Jim, then yeah. you would have to take you would have to continue those required minimum distributions. So there's a couple different calculations, but there's a certain amount every year that you'll have to continue to take.
I understand.
If that doesn't happen because there was no beneficiary, which is the more I talk this through, I think this might actually be what would happen, is that you're going to have to take that IRA money in a much sooner and not be able to spread it out or, quote, stretch it out as if you had been the beneficiary.
Okay.
So when you, and that's why, as I talk that this through, this is the case. This is why it's so important for you to, or all of us to lay, to actually have a named beneficiary in an IRA. If you don't, if you do, and you inherit money that's still in IRA form, you're going to still have to take out required minimum distributions over time. But if you're much younger, let's say you're 50, yeah, it's a very small amount.
In this case,
because there's no beneficiary, it's not going to be able to be stretched, is the terminology. So it's going to have to come out and quickly, and then it'll be taxable.
To the
I guess it would be to the estate, not necessarily to the beneficiary. So it's not nearly as tax efficient as it would have been if he had a designated beneficiary. So you're going to have to talk to a CPA about this,
okay,
and get the exact ruling on how this will work,
okay,
and or an estate planning attorney, but they'll be able to straighten that out pretty quickly. And then it also has to do with the rest of what the estate looks like. So there's more variables than what we're talking about. Make sure you talk to a CPA and or attorney to figure this out exactly. You are listening to Money Matters right here, WSB.
Now back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning from 9 to 11. Your phone calls, your questions here in the studio, depending on what you have to talk about. So we go anywhere from IRA questions like we just talked about, IRAs, estates, how all that works, what are the rules, and how does it impact you and your family if you were to inherit something? And then there's the investment side of that. So if you suddenly come into some sort of money, what do you do about it? I had a call this week about a lawsuit where someone's getting a significant lump sum because of a really tragic accident in the family, and there's this big lawsuit, and they're going to have to figure out what to do with the money, how to properly structure it, make sure it doesn't go away, doesn't get invested poorly and get fittered away or flittered away or just wasted away. And that's part of having a fundamentally sound strategy, and that's what we talk about here. How do you invest your money for a long period of time so it doesn't go away, so you can retire hopefully a little early or maybe really early. Title of my book, You Can Retire Sooner Than You Think. 5 Money Secrets of the Happiest Retirees on the Planet. How do you find that? What are those keys? So that's a big part of what we talk about here on Money Matters. How does all this impact you and your retirement? How much should you be saving? Do you know what you're putting into a 401k, what your match is, if you're doing this? Are you saving a certain amount every year? Do you have some sort of plan? You know, financial planning is pretty easy. It really is. It can be done. Most financial plans, whether you're worth $50,000 or $5 million, can be done, drawn out, mapped out on one piece of paper. You don't need a 100-page financial plan for the most part. 95% of people, and I'm not talking about people that don't have money. I'm talking about people that do have money, can really figure all of this out, map out a strategy, a plan, a roadmap, whatever you want to call it, really simply and quickly in a 1 to 2 page document. It might take some drawing, might take some architecture, but it can really be done very simply and straightforward because the variable, there's only so many variables. There's only so many inputs. There's only so many inputs we know. Of course, there are infinite outcomes and there's infinite scenarios because things change in the future. But as far as mapping out what we know today and what we plan to be doing year after year after year to get to a point where we can stop working, that can be done pretty simply. So we can talk that through. What if you have a pension or question about getting a lump sum pension? Should I take the monthly amount, Wes? I've got 2 or 3 pensions. One's little, one's medium, one's big. Which one should I take? Should I take all of them? And then if I take the lump sum instead of the monthly amount, what do I do with the money? In the world we live in today, do I put it all to work now? Do I wait till the market bottoms out, time it perfectly, put it in right and the market goes down and is ready to go back up the next day? How do you fight this market timing? What are you paying as an investor? I had an interesting meeting this week with someone in California that was in a portfolio that their advisor said it was free, no charges, free. You got to be careful when you ever hear that. they're paying 2-2.5% a year on every single investment. Now, how do you ever get anywhere if you're paying 2-2.5% a year on your investments when you could own better investments? It completely agnostic of the fee, but actually better investments that also then have fees that are 50-95% less. That should be everybody, but it's a long, slow, steady tide to turn when America for 20, 30, 50 years got used to high cost investing propagated by Wall Street. I don't mean to sound like a conspiracy theorist here on a Sunday morning, but there's typically, if you're not already doing this, there may be a much cheaper, better, more efficient way for you to be an investor. And that's eliminating what we call seven-layer dip. You don't want a seven-layer dip of fees on top of fees, on top of charges, on top of commissions, on top of fees to ruin your portfolio, just steadily weigh you down over time. So the number here, if any of that is a question to you and your family, and you want to just kind of talk that through with me or just get a second opinion on what you're doing and how this impacts your money and your family, then that's why we're here on Sunday morning. So the number in the studio, phone lines open 404-872-0750. Again, the number here in the studio, Ryan Neely, by the way, my producer, ready to take your call and patch it through, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. You can also find us on our Facebook page, Wes Moss Money Matters. So we talked a little bit about today what this latest job report really means, what the job report, how it impacts us as Americans, and then what it could potentially mean for the Fed, which has a lot to do with what's going to happen in the economy, at least for now. And by the way, we'll get to calls here in a minute. Let me go down this very important path for a second, just give you a recap. Jobs report this week, I thought it was a B- to a C+ when I first heard the numbers. You look into the report, it's probably a solid B. Added 151,000 jobs. Labor force participation rate actually went up. Unemployment rate went down. Average hourly earnings went up. So we see a little bit of strength in the underlying job economy, but not tremendous. We're not taking off like a rocket ship when it comes to jobs. Even though, yes, the unemployment rate is the lowest we've seen in 8 years, it's not through the roof. It's not like we got 250,000 jobs or 300,000 jobs for the month of January. If that were to happen, you would see the Federal Reserve really start cranking up interest rates. And they'd say, wow, the job market's overheating, the economy's overheating. Let's slow it down. Let's start raising rates. Let's put a wet blanket on everything. But the economic data we're getting isn't so strong to make the Fed get really jumpy. That's why we still may be in an okay situation. Now, I went back and did a little, with the help of one of my research companies, looked at the relationship between the unemployment rate and then what that means as far as recessions are concerned. So the question is this: hey, when do we go into the next recession? We're going to have one, right? So they're all the bear markets and recessions are inevitable. The question always is, when does that happen? Because if it happens this year, the correction that we're in could certainly turn into a bigger correction. We know historically that. And here are kind of the average numbers. If you have a stock market correction during a recession, you're going to average down 26-30% negative in the market. If you have a correction that is not associated with a really bad economy, then you can escape with something we would call just a correction, down 14-16%. So that at least seems to be the scenario that we're in. We're not in a recessionary period today. Now, and let's look at it from this perspective. Every time we see a prolonged unemployment rate trend down. So we go back, look at a chart, 1979 until today. We see, if we chart out the rate of unemployment as it's going down, we see wages start to rise. We saw this in 1986 period, 95, 04. And effectively since 2012 all the way to today. So the rate's going down. More and more people are getting jobs. Less and less people are unemployed. And wages are trending up just ever so slightly. They continue to go up. And if you look at every recession since the late 70s, So 1980, 1982, 83, 1991, 01, 07, 89. Average weekly hours worked are going down. Do you see what I'm saying here? Is that right? Usually, you have to see wages coming down and average hourly earnings going down in order to signal recession. Today, that's not happening. Today, those metrics are climbing, and they've been climbing for the last really almost 2 years now, or a year and a half. So the labor force is still strengthening to some extent. That helps me understand or know that at least right now, over the next, call it 6 months, we're not going into a recession. The number in the studio, 404-872-0750. We're going to go to the phones here. Ryan Neely, direct me where we're headed. We're going to line number four. We're going to four. We're going to Jerry, who joins us from Macon. Jerry, how can we help?
I have not much money, just about $102,000.
Got it.
Savings account that I have not touched in 5 years.
Meaning that, okay, so Jerry, you're not spending it. Does it mean that it's invested in something or it's just sitting there in cash or CDs?
It's just sitting there, drawing 0.4% or something like that.
Or maybe even 0.04, but keep going. Okay, I'm with you.
All right. Now, this money I won't put somewhere where I can start drawing dividends or something and building it up, because I want it left for two girls.
Now, Jerry, let me ask you, let's say it does get invested, and let's say you have it in something that gives you a 4% dividend rate. So it's creating, let's say hypothetically, $4,000 a year. Are you going to be taking that four and spending it, or really is it just going to the girls?
Oh, it's going to the girls. My house is paid for. My car is paid for. It's fairly new. I have no bills.
No bills. No car payment.
No. And I'm drawing approximately a little bit over $3,500 a year.
From what?
From retirement. My husband's retirement, my retirement, and Social Security.
So $3,500 probably per month, right, Jerry?
Yes.
Per month. Okay, I think you said per year. I was thinking that's a little low for even for Social Security. That's bad.
No, per month.
Which means that's enough. So it sounds like that really covers really the bill. So you don't need the $4,000 a month that would come off of this account if it were to be in something that's generating income, right?
No, I do not need it.
Okay.
I mean, this takes care of my bills, plus I use it sometimes to help one of the girls out if they have a problem or an extra bill, but I never need more than $1,000.
Got
them.
It. Got it.
But I'm saving out of one of my retirements, I'm saving $350 a month.
So you're saving money even though you're retired?
Yes.
Amazing. Here's an idea. I immediately, when I have this scenario come up, and this is pretty common, hey, I've got money, $50,000, $100,000, million, doesn't matter the amount, and I'm not going to touch it because for some reason, have another way of getting my income. Might be a pension. And social, might be two pension social, whatever it is. It's money that's really for my heirs. This is going to the next generation, which in my opinion allows you, and you could look at it a couple ways. Hey, it's going to my heirs. I don't need it. I don't even want to risk it. I want to leave it in CDs and treasuries. And by the way, if you did that, you can get about 1% a year. If you don't really need it and you're not concerned with having it in something that's going to bounce up and down in price, because of the stock market, then it allows you, and this is again the way I look at it, allows you to invest it and not worry about the money the value going up and down, because that's a tough part of investing, is watching your principal bounce up and down. I put in 100, today it's worth 95 because the market's down. Well, I put in 100, now it's worth 105. Well, so what? I'm not going to take it. All I'm taking, if I'm an income investor, is I'm taking the income. And in your case, you're just going to reinvest it and let the account grow. So if it pays, wow, if the account pays $4,000 in dividends, it's just going to get reinvested. So in my opinion, you should have it invested, 50% of it in some sort of dividend paying stocks, maybe 90% of it, Jerry. And here's an example. If you were to own I usually default to utilities. I say, hey, have you looked at Southern Company? Today, the yield is 4.5%. These utility companies are a little bit expensive, but they still pay about 4.5%. Southern Company does as a company. I'd rather see something like an ETF, DVY. That's the iShares Select Dividend ETF, Jerry. The yield on that isn't a full 4%. But if you look at the underlying holdings, it has some utilities in it, but then it also has some other areas like consumer staples, defense companies, some of the energy companies, and it's a nice mix of all this. So it's got Lockheed Martin in it, Philip Morris, Kimberly-Clark, McDonald's, Florida Power Light, which is now NextEra Energy, and you have a diversified way to have a yield that's about 3.5%, and that's a formula that I think you should really take a look at. You're listening to Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Welcome back to Money Matters. Sunshine, chilly today, high of 55. Looks pretty nice. High of 56, actually, low of 35. Brought to you by Shoemate Heating and Cooling. Let's go to the phones here on Money Matters. Mike, who joins us on the line. Mike, how can we help?
Hey, how are you? I love your show. I hear a lot of times that when financial planning shows like yours or other financial planners, they often cover retirement. But how can you, or what is your advice for somebody like me who's recently married and has a 5-year-old with one or two more kids on the way? How can we factor future kids or kids into our financial plan? And is that covered in your book as well?
It's expensive. You know that. How old are you, Mike?
35 now.
Oh, so you're mid-30s. Okay.
Yeah, both of us are.
Well, so it's all of these same rules, Mike. They work for all of us. All of the fundamentals of... So in Retire Sooner Than You Think, my book, it's about people that are within the 10-year period of retiring or already have retired. And we track all of their secrets and their habits effectively. They're not secrets. We're talking about them today. They're habits or best practices, whatever you want to call it. And they all did it, though, starting in their 30s and 40s. That's why they can retire, quote, sooner. So, yeah, we talk about retirement, but really, who does it really help the most? It helps you. It helps guys in their 30s, late girl families in their 30s, when you're just getting out of debt and you're able to start saving. Man, that's when you have the most powerful period of time to get going. And yes, if you have two kids and another one on the way, it's a constant evolution of how you do your planning. I just sat down. So I have another kid coming. I have a fourth child coming probably this Wednesday. It looks like when my wife's going to late. She's scheduled to kind of go in that day. So on Thursday, Ryan will attest to this. I literally sat down and just redid my budget. Just redo it. So it's an evolution because I'm like, well, we're having another kid. And right now my kids are in public school, but I'm thinking about private school. So if that happens, that's another gigantic line item on my budget. So I've got a plan for it. And that's it's just this evolution. And as long as you can get this high level, get your own financial ratios right. Here's a quick one to remember. Great rule of thumb called TSL. Taxes, savings, life. Take your gross income, Mike, 100 grand, 200 grand, 5 million. I don't know what you make. It doesn't matter because the ratio is what matters. You take your gross income, taxes, assume 30, and it could be lower, could be a little higher, but assume 30. Sure. So on 100 grand, 30 goes to the government in the state of Georgia. TSS for savings, 20, which leaves L for life, 50. So if you can, and that's not easy for everybody, if you can average that ratio over the next 20 years, 30 taxes, 20 savings is the key, and the other half on life of your, again, we're going from your gross income number, then you'll get to, that's effectively the ratio that these early retirees used.
Which one goes to retirement, the savings?
All, yeah, that whole 20% goes to, it's all retirement. Now, granted, some of that can go in for kids' education, which could be also borrowed for as well. You can't obviously borrow for retirement. As long as you're doing 20%, the S part of TSL, you're golden. So also check out, you can retire sooner than you think. It's much more for guys in their 30s and 40s like you than you might think. You're listening to Money Matters right here on WSB.